Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of our other episodes at cinematica.co.nz. Righto, everybody. Simon's got to go and pick the kids up, so we're going to race through this particular introduction. This is Season 3, Episode 17 of Cinematica. I'm Dan Slevin, and joining with me in the Cinematica studio are...
Kayla Carruthers.
And Simon. Nice work. Go.
In today's episode, the first Kiwi feature of the year showcases our musical as well as screen talent. Stan Walker stars in Mount Zion. The hunt for Osama bin Laden is brought vividly to life in Zero Dark Thirty. Anna Karenina is the sixth big screen adaptation of Tolstoy's classic novel. And Alfred Hitchcock gets a biopic starring Anthony Hopkins. That's A.H. playing A.H., which I think is kind of neat.
It is.
But first, what is in the mailbag? Kaylee, you have been monitoring our Google feeds.
Yes, more importantly, what's an actual real physical mailbag from Canada?
Oh.
I forgot your gifts last week. But
oh, prezzies.
Maple syrup.
Yes. Maple. Oh, you can't get maple syrup through customs?
Oh, you can if you smuggle
it. Simon, for you, I brought you a Yeti.
Oh, my goodness.
Or a Sasquatch, as we call them in Canada.
Look at that. Thank you. That's very lovely. That's something for the desk, isn't it?
It is, and it's furry. It's got a metal ring sticking out of its head.
Yes, for those in Canada, its name is a Squatchy. You'll know what I'm talking about.
And it's wearing little warm ear warmers, which is nice. And I think this will be quite relieving. You know, good for stress relief.
Just give a little caress. And Dan, for you. Oh, this price tag stuff.
It's in Canadian dollars, so I wouldn't know what it actually means in real money.
We've just got the Pacific peso.
I got you your own little musical ride.
Look at that.
Musical ride.
A mini rider. Look at that. You wind it up.
Okay.
Oh, you get it. Oh, look. Giddy up.
Wind up mini rider. Okay.
No mess, no fuss. The horse stays in the box.
Yeah.
Doesn't
good
poop
work
on your desk.
Okay. That is brilliant. Thank you very much. And that, so Canadian culture has come to New Zealand in the form of...
A wind-up horse.
Yeah, two bits of brown wildlife, basically.
Yeah, I don't know why. I'm thinking of the Lone Ranger now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that horse, giddy up.
Yep, hi-ho, silver await. That's American,
right,
isn't it?
Yep.
And, like, there's what's the flag that this rider is holding?
Oh, well, I think it's meant to be, because the RCMP do what's called a musical ride, and there's music on, they ride around their horses, but I'm not quite
that's
sure.
Not
he kind of looks like the Lone Ranger with a Swedish flag or something.
It doesn't look like one of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. I noticed you did the acronym there as if we all knew what that meant. Anyway, thank you. This is going to have pride and place on my mantelpiece. As another great film quote once said, this is going straight to the pool room.
I watched that this weekend.
It's brilliant,
isn't
it?
For the first time. It was pretty good.
Legend.
Pretty legendary.
I love the way the lawyer's described in that. It's brilliant.
It's the vibe, Your Honour. All right, so what have we been sent from people not coming from Canada?
Oh, let's see. We have some two-word reviews. Dilla Monster said the impossible, the implausible.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but actually true. So, you know, get over it.
Miriam Ruth Ross sent us a few really good ones this week.
She's the only person that I know has been to see Hansel and Gretel in 3D.
Good work.
I haven't quite made it to that yet. It's on my schedule.
Oh, maybe we should go together.
Yeah.
Zero Dark Thirty, torturingly mediocre. Hansel and Gretel 3D, blood-spurting witchery.
I get the feeling she liked Hansel and Gretel more than Zero Dark.
Yes.
And Django Unchained, unrepentant pastiche.
Oh, yep. She's been to see a lot of films, which leads one to believe that Victoria University is not yet back in session.
That's right.
Still the holidays. Anything else from anyone else, or shall we crack on and see what people have been going to see this weekend? What's the box office been like?
Yeah, some interesting movement at the box office. So coming in at number 5, up from 14 last week, Silver Linings Playbook. That's a big jump.
Mm. It was only Sneaks the weekend before. It was only a very limited session, so this is the opening week.
Mm. Mm. Still, it just looks strange. Mm. number 4 is Life of Pi, down from 3.
Still going.
Still strong.
Yeah.
Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters opens at number 3. Les Mis is still at 2, and Django remains in the number one position after 2 weeks.
Wow. It really is Tarantino's strongest box office. It's already in the States. It's his biggest film ever, and which is a good thing. You know, maybe we won't have to wait quite so long for another Tarantino movie.
He won't figure in the awards, though, sadly.
Heck no. Mm. And actually, there were. I was just reading about this the other day. There are 4 original songs in Django Unchained, and none of those made it into the Academy Award nominees, and yet the song from Ted did. Mm. So, what's that all about?
What about Mr. Affleck? I mean, he's not in there for Best Director, is he?
No, we're going to talk about him a little bit later on, actually. But just going back to a little bit of follow-up from last week's show, which was in itself follow-up from the week before. I talked to a regular podcast listener, Yutha Dean, on Friday, who explained to me why Johnny Greenwood hasn't been nominated for the score for The Master, and it's apparently because more than 10% of the music has been used previously, so it's not original. It's like 10% is actually quite a low bar, isn't it? Mm. You know, like if he's writing sort of classical bits and pieces for ballet companies and what have you, that he can't reuse that music for a Hollywood film and still be nominatable. So that's the reason why, not because Hollywood doesn't think it's any good. So.
Uh-huh. But we think it's great because we've been talking about it for 3 weeks.
3 weeks, yeah, exactly. It's like it's an obsession. Right, time to talk about New Zealand in the 1970s, 80s. Anybody know?
I'm here with one of the promoters of the concert.
That's right. Well, the line is coming. I'm playing a one-off concert and we're running a competition to find the opening act.
Get to work.
What do you want?
Oh, now we get to play.
You even played on stage before? Well, hurry up then.
So full, so hearty. I am a waterfall.
How do you fellas like to open for the next band in town?
What do you mean?
Not a trick question.
All right, Mount Zion opens across New Zealand pretty wide on Thursday. It's been getting a lot of
Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Waitangi Day. Comes out of course, tomorrow. Which, and as actually, hold on a second, seeing as that we'll probably end up posting this on Wednesday night, opens today.
Yes.
Everybody.
There you go.
So, yep, we're pretty much up with the play, or at least as far up with the play as I am usually. I haven't yet seen this film. You two guys have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to interrogate you a little bit. Oh, no, you haven't. Sorry, Kaylee.
Just interrogate me.
Okay, I will. Sigh, what's it all about then?
Bring out the water bucket and stuff.
Because I know...
a bit of boarding.
Yeah, later.
Zero Dark, baby. I'm ready.
Zero Dark Zion.
Yeah.
Because I know nothing about popular culture, I don't actually know who Stan Walker is. So maybe
I know who Stan Walker is.
I didn't know who he was either. I was thinking this guy's pretty cool. Yeah, I was watching it and going, oh yeah, and then everyone's going, oh, isn't Stan Walker great? I was going, who?
Maybe we'll start with Kaylee. You can explain who Stan Walker is, and then we'll fit him into the
context. I know now, but you have the floor.
Yeah, well, Stan Walker is like a pop, maybe sort of R&B artist, actually from Australia, not New Zealand. He won Australia's Got Talent.
But he's a Kiwi.
Is he Kiwi?
Well, yeah.
Maybe it's
Australasia's Got Talent. I read that wrong.
I just assumed he's a Kiwi. I think he is a Kiwi.
Oh. Right, but anyway, he reached.
Do you want me to Google it right now?
Yes, please.
Keep talking.
While we're talking about the film.
Stan Walker is a musician, and he's got a sultry, sexy voice, and this movie's got to be good for the ladies.
Yeah.
Oh, and the chaps, thank you very much. It's a neat. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
You've been talking about this for a while.
Yeah, I did. Well. I went to it. Maybe it's because I just went in with absolutely no idea what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it was a neat story, and the acting was great. And I mean, this guy, Stan Walker, he stood up and was really good in his role. I mean, the supporting cast that was around him was really good. Temuera Morrison was his usual
sort of solid self now, isn't he?
He's so solid.
He's very reliable. So tell us a little bit about about Simon?
Well, it's about this. Family or this community, a Māori community in Pukekohe, who are picking potatoes, really, you know, and that's their main. They're all sort of working together and working for each other to get as many sacks of potatoes out as they can, and it starts with this wonderful opening scene of these guys just working away in the Pukekohe fields, picking or shoveling up potatoes and putting them in sacks, and they get paid per sack, and that's it just reet of nostalgia for me. Like, I was watching, you look at it and it has this charming New Zealand look and feel to it. This, I guess, you know, which maybe a lot of kids now don't get because they're not so much in the country. But when I was a kid in the country, you know, you always went into the country and you always worked somewhere in the country and you always knew somebody who did. And I really loved it, the opening scene, and I thought it was just very familiar.
Brought it all back for
it
you.
It did. For me, it was hay, not potatoes.
Okay.
But, so it starts with, and of course, news breaks that Bob Marley is coming. He's going to play a concert and that they're taking auditions for, you know, somebody to play before Bob Marley goes on. And the character played by Stan Walker is obsessed with this. You know, it's this big opportunity and he really, it becomes an issue of one's loyalty to the community and family versus achieving this goal of playing in front of this crowd and before Bob Marley.
Is there a chance that if he goes to this audition, they won't get the potato crop in and the thing will fail? Because there's a bit of this. There are hints of cliche about this.
There is, but you know, it's played so well because what they're threatened with is cheaper labour. So they have to achieve certain things, and there's a bit of a push on to do so. And he kind of goes AWOL when that happens. And so I thought it was, you know, the way that they handled that and did it, I thought it was really well done. You know, it's and quite realistic. You know, they just the owners of the place were saying, well, you know, we're going to get in cheaper labor if you can't deliver.
So the family don't own the land that they're working, sort of interesting sort of socioeconomic take on the whole thing.
That sort of comes up briefly in the film. You know, why are we doing this? Why aren't we doing it for ourselves? And these sorts of things, which I thought was, you know, again, well handled. Mm-hmm. I found it, I found it really enjoyable and really, you know, interesting and you know, it had my attention the whole way through.
What about the music?
The music for me, I thought, I wasn't too sure what to expect, and I was thinking, if this is too crash and bash or not sort of handled right, then it'll actually be a negative to the film. I thought, but the way that they do it and the way they tie it in, it's very pleasing. I enjoyed the music that was played, and it doesn't dominate the film in any way. It's important, but it's not sort of. It doesn't dominate the airspace, so to speak, and crash and bash through the film. So, the music is actually really catchy and really enjoyable.
There's no Marley on the soundtrack album. I was just digging around looking for some music to play at the end of the show. But there are tracks by Peter Tosh. There's tracks by 10cc or Dreadlock Holidays on the soundtrack album. Mm. And you know, but actually, it's a good soundtrack album. Just so it's roughly split half and half between the band that Stan Walker forms, and so original music and original songs and sort of classic reggae hits like Now That We've Found Love, those sorts of things. So you know, if you want a sort of a really nice easy listening car CD with some great sort of reggae tunes on it, classic reggae tunes, it'd be not a bad bet, I reckon.
Yep. I thought it was interesting also how close it's come out to the Sapphires. It's almost like New Zealand's answer to the Sapphires and, like, you know, true stories of.
And I think you could draw comparisons to that. But I actually.
Is it as much of a feel good as the Sapphires was?
It's not as. I don't think it has the comic aspect that Sapphires had. I mean, because of all. What's his name in the Sapphires? Chris O'Dowd. I mean, he there isn't that sort of character, but there is good humour in it, and it's good New Zealand humour. It's kind of it only we seem to be able to pull off. And I haven't for me the last film that I saw that I thought enjoyed that match was Boy, like a New Zealand film about New Zealand. And I thought, well, you know, this is really good because it's a sort of crossover broad film, but it's distinctly New Zealand.
Yeah, resolutely ours, isn't it?
Yeah, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, because no other country in the world really took to Marley the way that New Zealand did at that period. You know, in terms of an entire culture sort of embracing him and his music and his message, and that was something that came through pretty clearly in the Marley documentary that was in the festival last year.
Yeah,
and so I think that it's a really neat idea of this story to actually make that connection. You know, I think it's a really important sort of New Zealand. Moment in history.
It is, and it's got a few layers to it. It's got a few stories that are going on to cross over and so on. It's not just all about one person in the film. There's a few other things which are, which, you know, I wouldn't spoiler alert, but there are two or three stories that are running that are crossing over each other, which they handled it quite well. So I mean, I would really recommend this film.
That's a very, very strong recommendation from Simon.
You will come out of it with a smile on your face, you know? You will.
Looking forward to it. Can you narrow it down to two words for us?
Well, you know, I'm going to say Zionastic.
Zionastic.
And just to confirm, yes. Stan Walker is a New Zealand Australian recording artist, born in Australia, though. He was the winner of the seventh and last season of Australian Idol.
I was like, these young people, what? I don't have time to watch this.
He's a pretty good looking guy.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. For those of us that don't watch television and...
Or listen to Top 40 radio.
And I think for a first-off effort, he does very well.
Yeah. Mm. Well, terrific. Nice work. I'm very much looking forward to it. And here's a film that Kaylee hasn't been looking forward to.
I want to make something absolutely clear. If you thought there was some working group coming to the rescue... I want you to know that you're wrong. This is it. There's nobody else hidden away on some other floor. There is just us. And we are failing.
You will never find him. He is one of the disappeared ones.
Long-awaited Zero Dark Thirty made it into cinemas last weekend. This is a film that sort of is crashing into all of the other Oscar nominees in the New Zealand cinemas, and I hope it's finding an audience. And hands up around the table, who's seen this one? Okay, so it's me then, right? Okay, everyone's got their hands down. Right, so looks like another monologue by me. Right.
That's okay.
Zero Dark Thirty, a pretty familiar story, I think, to most film goers. It's the true story of the hunt for Osama bin Laden by the CIA in the years post 9/11, leading up to his, spoiler alert, eventual capture. Not capture. Disposal.
Disposal, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They make a point of not capturing him, which only happened a couple of years ago. So it was a long, long, hard road to try and track him down, and many blind alleys gone down. Many of those blind alleys caused by dodgy intelligence generated through the use of some dubious interrogation techniques. Not to say that some genuine intelligence wasn't gathered that way, no matter how awful the idea is. But one of the problems, I think, with torture generally as an interrogation method is people will say anything. Mm. And so it's very hard to work out whether someone's telling you the truth or just telling you what you want to hear so that you'll go away. One of the reasons this film has had such a tortured existence, really, is that lots of people who've watched the film, and quite a few people who haven't watched the film, think that it's that it justifies torture or argues for torture as a justified method of intelligence gathering. And I don't know how anybody could look at the film and think that. It seems really clear to me that the film itself is very negative towards torture in terms of its impact on the victims and its impact on the torturers as well. And it's also really clear that the hunt for bin Laden doesn't really get underway, even though there is the first sort of core piece of information comes as a result of it. The hunt doesn't really get underway without genuine old-fashioned sleuthing and police work, which happens after Barack Obama is elected and he bans the use of those sorts of interrogation techniques. So the film itself, I don't think, has in any way argues for torture or pro anything like that. I think it's a pretty clear-headed, clear-minded portrait of the whole thing. Whether Jessica Chastain's character Maya, who is the focus of the film from an investigation point of view, she's the one single-minded CIA person who will not let go of this clue and insists on following it right through to the bitter end.
That sounds familiar.
Whether she's
how Homeland is it?
Well, I've only seen one episode of Homeland, and I thought that was garbage.
Really? No. I'm watching. Well, I'm
So you do watch television sometimes.
My wife's more hooked than I am, but I still follow it. Yeah.
Well, as I think I had a conversation with Steve Gray actually about that not long ago, and he just said, don't forget, all television is soap opera. And so that's really, you know, what my understanding of Homeland is. It's just, you know, soap opera in a CIA context.
But it's this individual who is obsessed and won't let it go.
My understanding is that this character, Maya, may or may not actually be either a condensation of a number of different characters, or whether she is actually based on a real person. Of course, the CIA isn't telling for reasons of security. But she's a great focus for the story, and you do need a hook to be able to sort of drive through. Now, we all saw The Hurt Locker. Can I get a show of hands on The Hurt Locker?
You know it.
Okay, all right. So Kaylee needs to do some homework. And
you've got to see The Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
Hey, I've watched The Castle this weekend, okay? I did my homework.
If that's how, you've got a long way to get a lot more films to see before you get to The Hurt Locker.
Yeah, that's right. So Hurt Locker was a Best Picture winner. And I don't know about you, Si, but I felt like it was an effective film, but I wasn't yet convinced that Catherine Bigelow was the great director everybody was saying that she was, partly because it was set in this bomb disposal situation. And if you can't make bomb disposal exciting or tense or nerve-wracking, then, you know, you've got a few problems. I reckon that, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, the way that the characters were in The Hurt Locker, I thought, was handled really well in the way that he kind of, this was his world and he couldn't really leave it.
Right.
He got off on it. You know, I thought that. I mean, I really enjoyed The Hurt Locker.
Yeah. Well, my memory of The Hurt Locker is of some fantastic set pieces that didn't necessarily get strung together all that well. And it's a similar sort of problem with Zero Dark Thirty, in that it's a much better film when people aren't talking. There's like the stuff of exposition and people in rooms and the arguments over this, that, and the other aren't particularly well written and not particularly well acted, I don't think. Whereas when there's an action sequence, or somebody's about to be a suspect's about to be pinched, or indeed the sequence where they actually where the SEALs actually go in and get Bin Laden. It's just a brilliantly conceived and executed operation. You know, she really does do action as well as anybody else in the world. You are on the edge of your seat through all of those periods, and then the pressure gets let off periodically when they all stop and start arguing with each other. So I think that Bigelow is a fantastic director. I'm not convinced about the script in this particular case.
How does it cover off on the whole? Because, you know, at the time when that happened, they did it without Pakistan's knowledge. They just went in and did the op.
And
how does that? How is that sort of covered in the film?
Well, it's actually extremely tense and exciting, because during the operation itself, there's Maya, played by Jessica Chastain, is back at base listening for Pakistani radio, military radio chatter, to find out whether they have been spotted or not. They're flying these experimental radar resistant helicopters that are also virtually silent, but they've got no weaponry, so they can't. So if the Pakistanis decided that they were going to fly F-16s against them, they would have no defenses. It was an extremely ambitious and dangerous operation, and they basically, and one, of course, one of the helicopters crashes, you know, at the scene. So, you know, it's a brilliantly tense sequence, and even though you know a lot of the details, anyone who's read something like Vanity Fair or Huffington Post or something like that, you'll know the details of what went on, but it doesn't make it any less exciting or thrilling to watch. So it's a long movie. I don't know if it needs to be as long as it is. I mean, it's kind of epic hobbity length, and I do wonder whether it could have been a lot leaner than it is. But the stuff that works in Zero Dark Thirty really does work, and the stuff that doesn't, you know, you can maybe turn a blind eye to.
So you got two words for us?
Now putting me on the spot, and it would be Golden Silences.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good stuff. All right, time for some news.
Former New York City Mayor Ed Koch died on Saturday at the age of 88, a polarizing figure in New York politics. He was a closet gay and did little to advance the fight against AIDS in the 1980s, for example. In later years, he became a film reviewer, first for a local free paper and then in little video reviews on his own website, Mayor Koch at the Movies. Here are some choice recent quotes.
Stuff to raise the standard for all of us, I think.
On the Lincoln Lawyer, his car is a Lincoln Town car. Very comfortable car. On Annette Bening in The Kids Are All Right, she does a brilliant job as a lesbian. Makes it very natural. Koch, a showman to the very end, died on the same day a documentary on his life was released in cinemas, ensuring maximum publicity.
Ooh. Yeah, and I while I was doing a little bit of research today, I checked out the trailer for that Ed Koch film, and having spent a little bit of time in New York last year, the movies about New York and New York politics and New York history really appealed to me. And it's like, because it's not the same city as it was when he took it on. You know, there's it's almost another world.
Mm. Despite not receiving an Oscar nomination for Best Direction, Ben Affleck scooped the top prize for Argo at the Directors Guild Awards show on Sunday night. Meanwhile, across town, Wreck-It Ralph won the top Annie Award at the International Animated Film Society gathering at UCLA.
See, I think there'll be a few blushes over this, that he's not nominated for Best Director.
Well, yeah, apparently, though, that the membership of the Directors Guild and the directors' membership of the Academy are not that... there's not that many crossover. The Directors Guild, I'm given to understand, has a lot of television directors in it, and so they tend to sort of have quite a different approach. I think it's only sort of about half and half that the Directors Guild winner actually goes on to win the.
I don't know. I think I mean you look
but
at
to
the
not
town,
be nominated yeah, to not be nominated
to not be nominated because you look at the town and then you look at this. I mean, he's actually showing. You know, he's got
some chops.
Goods.
He's got some chops. Yeah, absolutely.
So I think they could have recognized him in this.
Yeah. Well, it's. It will be interesting, and we should probably announce this, that we're going to be doing our own pre-Oscar special on this show. We're going to have a couple of guests in the studio.
And there's going to be confetti.
We're going to try and make some predictions, and not just about the Oscars, but maybe about the red carpet as well. And we'll see if we can.
And we've opened up a website crystal ball. Now where you can go online and actually go on a ballot to vote on the Oscars.
Right.
So Kaylee, that's
are there prizes?
There are prizes.
So,
might enter myself.
You should. The more the merrier.
Yes, I can put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Indeed. So, yeah, check it out, everybody. Yes.
And in interesting production news, Bradley Cooper and the Untouchable stars and the Untouchables' Omar Sy are down to team up in a new comedy, Chef, in which Cooper plays a Michelin-starred chef who loses his restaurant and tries to start again in London. That sounds so familiar. Le Chef.
That's Le Chef. Yeah.
Similar, but not quite.
Similar, yeah. It's like the first half. Yeah.
Most interesting of all of the choices is that of director Derek Cianfrance, best known here for the heavyweight and largely improvised Blue Valentine. Cianfrance's latest film, The Place Beyond the Pines, also stars Cooper and Ryan Gosling, and for some reason it has no New Zealand release date.
How did distributors not get that Ryan Gosling is like...
Money.
There's a certain amount of money in any Ryan Gosling film at the moment. You know, you'd think. It may be on your list, but it wasn't on any of mine. I think it may have actually been on a list at some point and then dropped off. But it does look really good.
Yeah,
so,
Madman, we know you listen.
Yeah, that's right.
Do us a solid.
Get the checkbook out.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's Ryan. Yeah. Come on.
Okay, so can we just make a little modicum of effort to be classy now, because it's classical literature time.
I was 18 when I got married. But it was not love. Your husband is a saint, and we must all cherish him for Russia's sake.
Romantic love would be the last illusion of the old order.
I must warn you about something.
Warn me?
You may, by indiscretion, give the world occasion to talk about you.
If you have any thought for me, you will give me back my peace.
There can be no peace for us. Only misery, like greatest happiness.
Oh, so this is love.
We are bound together by God, and this can only be broken by a crime against God.
Oof. Anna Karenina, Tolstoy.
epic.
Epic. It's
snow
been told,
machines going hard out.
It's been told so many times on the big screen. I was looking it up today. There were 6 previous big screen versions, plus like 4 different television miniseries versions. It's just it is the gift that keeps on giving in lots of ways. And this is a very unusual adaptation of the film, of the book. And it's an 800-page book, right? So you'd think squeezing it into 2 hours would be a bit of a challenge. But Tom Stoppard is the screenwriter, and he is best known as a playwright. And I think that he's actually taken that playwriting experience and used that to condense the story very, very effectively. And not only that, but set it in a theatre, which I think is really interesting. Hands up anybody else who's seen Anna Karenina.
Okay, no, sorry, mate, you again.
Me again. Okay,
but you did see this in...
In London.
In London.
I saw this in London.
With your aunt?
No, she didn't want to go because she... This was the thing. She wouldn't go to Anna Karenina because she, my aunt, has a problem with Keira Knightley. And I think that this is a real... This is an obstacle that people are going to have to get over because...
Because apparently she's good.
She's bloody good. She's really good. And she's...
Does she do her, like, pouty lip quiver?
Well, maybe she does, but maybe that's all right. Maybe that's fine.
No, because not for Anna Karenina. Anna Karenina is like pretty awesome. I haven't read the original book. I've read the.
You've read the Cole's notes, haven't you? You've read the Cliff's notes.
No, I've read Android Karenina. Thank you very much.
Android Karenina.
So I know the story.
See, that's a new word, isn't it?
That makes Android all Karenina. Makes all the difference. I'll tell you. I think that I know a lot of people don't like this film, and I think that the people who don't like it, it does seem to be sort of along the lines of people who are pro Keira Knightley and people who are anti Keira Knightley. I know that it's done, the whole production, this is a Joe Wright film, a guy who made Atonement, who has a few chops of his own.
And Pride and Prejudice.
And Pride and Prejudice, exactly.
He's on a roll with Keira.
Yeah, and a muse, if you will. And this is because of the way that the story is being told. It's very in a very stylized way, with everything taking place inside a theater that magically transforms into the various different locations and settings. It's very rare that it actually steps outside of the theater into the countryside, for example. I think that for a lot of people, it's just there's too much to get your head around. You know, it's not a straight television. A naturalistic telling of the story, and it's the condensation, if you will, of the story does require quite a lot of concentration because it cracks on at a good old pace, and it doesn't make any concessions to you. Really, you have to concentrate and you have to pick up the clues as you go. I liked it a lot. I love theatricality. I love people trying to do new things with the way that they tell stories. I'm a big fan of anti-naturalism on cinema screens, because naturalism, I think, is sort of deathly boring often. The problems I had with Anna Karenina were not with Keira Knightley, but were with Aaron Taylor-Johnson, who plays Vronsky.
I thought that was such a strange casting decision.
Well, he's a bit of a Hollywood star now, but I spent most of the film during the period that they were on screen together going, what on earth do you see in him? Why would you throw away your life for him? And that's kind of the point, right, is that she sacrifices everything for this great love. And I just think that he's just kind of drippy, really. So I don't really get that. But the supporting cast are fantastic. It's lots of just brilliant British actors. The dialogue is snappy and tight and... A big round of applause to Jude Law, who is turning into a really good character actor. Now that he's getting a little bit older and his hair's thinning a wee bit and that leading man stuff's disappearing, we're finding out...
He is not with the nanny anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, who knows what's going on in his private life, but...
That'll make you lose your hair.
But he's turning into somebody who's got some interesting aspects to him, and I think that bodes well for the future. And it's nice to see him, you know, not play a leading man, but he's essentially the villain of the piece in this film. So
it's funny you say that, though, about the love interest, because that was what I thought when I saw the trailer. I thought, well, who is that?
Yeah. Why would you?
You know, like, it didn't have a hook.
Yeah, because Vronsky's supposed to be this like manly man, like babe of the times, who does end up being a bit flaky and a bit of a jerk, but
But it's too late by then. But which is, you know, just.
But you, with Aaron Johnson, like, you kind of see it from the beginning. You're like,
I think the only way I could probably argue it is that her relationship with Jude Law, who plays the husband, is so loveless that that she would, that there was a period where she would have fallen for the first person that she was attracted to, regardless of how. What the reality was of that situation, and that perhaps that's the through line for her, is that it's more about getting out of this oppressive, loveless situation rather than going towards something. It'll be interesting to see what people think. I hope it finds an audience, particularly amongst the people who are loving those NT Live screenings that there are so many of nowadays. I think it's really cinematic as well as theatrical, and I think that it's a really good retelling, and it's so nice to talk about a film that's actually lean and tight and not kind of flabby and too long, and
because there's quite a bit of that coming out at the moment.
Well, exactly. I mean, we're just talking about Zero Dark Thirty, which is like 2.5 hours plus, and it's too long for the story that it has to tell. Whereas, the always leave the public wanting more should be the watchword. You're going to ask me for two words again on this one, aren't you? So thumbs up from Si. And I would call this one adventurously classical. What was it? Anna Karenina, Joe Wright. What was I just talking about? What was it called?
AK.
Yeah. And talking about AK, it's time to go to AH.
That's right.
All of us harbour dark recesses of violence and horror. I'm just a man hiding in the corner with a camera, watching. This is murder. I'm getting blisters just watching you.
He's going out of his mind looking for his next project.
I need something fresh, something different.
It was the knife that, a moment later, cut off her scream and her head. Charming. Doris Day should do it as a musical.
The film is called Hitchcock, directed by Sacha Gervaisi, and it's hands up, who's seen Hitchcock? Two of you. Great. Yep. I haven't seen it, so I'm going to yield the floor to you guys to tell us what it's about and whether it's worth seeing.
Go, Simon.
Well, it's definitely worth seeing, and if, for anyone who's kind of interested in that time, and I guess the filmmaking and the characters involved, because, I mean, Hitchcock, I mean, I didn't know too much about Hitchcock personally. I knew a bit about him as a filmmaker and the films that he made, but this is nice to see that this is a film, really, and I guess it's true in so many ways, that the real strength behind Hitchcock is his wife, and played by Helen Mirren, and it's a really interesting look at that and the dynamic and how they work together, and with Psycho, that was actually quite a punt for them. They had to refinance and do it all on their own, and at certain points of the film, he's absolutely certain that that's the thing to do. His character, though, you know, it has its flaws, and you can see, you know, they're sort of put out there, and he has his moments of insecurity, is he doing the right thing? And she's this guiding force that's always there behind him to steer him, to reconnect them in the right way and say, no, you go back and do this. And the amount of work that she did actually in terms of writing and so on and the script work and all that sort of thing and tidying it all up and saying, and there's this great scene in there where he says, you know, I'm thinking I might kill her off at halfway through the film. And she goes, no, don't do that. Surprise everyone, do it in the first 15, you know, and things like that. So it has a lot of interest to it. And I like these two actors, always can watch them and their typical sort of level of quality that they bring to the film. So it's a really interesting film, and got some neat little cameos there from help me out here, Kaylee, Jessica Biel and
Scarlett Johansson,
the
leading ladies.
Leading ladies, you know, and they're all glammed up and looking very 1950s, and so it's got a lovely look and feel to it.
I just want to jump in here and say that, having given Kaylee a hard time for not seeing The Hurt Locker a little bit earlier on, I should point out that I have never seen Psycho.
haven't you? No. Yeah, we see
North by Northwest.
So, yeah, see, yes.
Rear Window.
Yes. But Psycho never appealed to me. And it's possibly because of the subject matter. Just one of those ones that I've never got sought out. Whereas Cary Grant, yeah, you're always going to want to see Cary Grant and James Stewart.
If you ever go to Universal Studios and go on the studio tour, you have to see Psycho or you won't get it because that's the best part of it.
Yeah. Well, maybe, so should I watch Psycho before I watch Hitchcock?
Would it make a huge difference.
Homework?
So you know what scenes they're filming.
Yeah, like, and the importance of them. And how, because they really portray him as someone who really drove his actors and sort of really put them in difficult positions and really worked them hard to get what he wanted. And that comes through in the film, particularly in the shower scene.
My favorite Hitchcock quote of all time is where he said, "I never said that actors were cattle. I said they should be treated like cattle."
Right. Yeah. And the, you know, a lot of the characters refer to how tough he is on them and how he sort of, some careers have been hurt by it and others have flourished. But there's two or three things going on in the film. There's Helen Mirren, he thinks she's having an affair and she's, because she goes off with this other writer and works on his works and so on. But essentially this guy really just wants to try and get in with Hitchcock and have some of the fame rub off. And so there's a couple of nice stories going on underneath the main one, which is, you know, how he goes from being this very famous, respected maker, or has delivered in the box office a number of times for all the studios, but is in a little bit of a lull, and comes across Psycho and against sort of
he pretty much invents independent cinema, doesn't he? Really, there's a whole transformation of the industry that happens as a result of him financing
and horror.
Getting
the audience absolutely frightened, you know, really, really scaring them. And I think, he was a master of that. I really enjoyed the film. I reckon it's one that, you know, they'll come out with a bit of a smile on their face. They'll have enjoyed it. And it sort of ticks all the boxes.
Kaylee, what do you think?
I loved it. I really appreciated it. It was a nice, clean look, clean dialogue, story in a watchable amount of time. Really enjoyable, not difficult, and just, it was a really, really nice, refreshing piece of cinema to watch about a really fantastic director and kind of a dramatized look behind the scenes of what happened for probably one of his most famous films that he came out with. Because I had no idea about the story behind the making of the film.
No, neither did I.
And I didn't know it was based on a book either, and it was based on, I think, I don't know if it's based on a true story
as
well.
Yes, apparently, inspired by it. Yes, exactly.
And it was, yeah. I mean, it actually, some terrible events occurred, didn't they?
Yeah, and the actors playing actors within the film did an amazing job. They must have studied the film so many times to just get the movements down right when they're reenacting it on the set. I was very impressed.
All right, two words.
My two words are get hitched.
I thought would be one.
Yeah.
But then I thought, no, shower time.
Shower time. Yep. Yeah. Good stuff. Well, you've caned the two words this time around. That was Hitchcock. If you want an alternative perspective on Hitchcock from one of our guest reviewers at Christmas, Glenn Kenny did not enjoy Hitchcock. So you can find that on our Best of the Year show from the end of last year. That's still downloadable at our site. That is our show for this week. Next week, Robert Zemeckis returns to live action with the thriller Flight. And if you've enjoyed this episode, sorry, you've got to go, haven't you?
Goodbye.
Okay.
See you later.
Bye, Simon.
Bye, Si. All right, we'll just let him go.
All right, guys.
Bye.
Next week, Robert Zemeckis returns to live action with the thriller Flight. We'll have that and more in next week's exciting episode of New Zealand's favourite movie podcast, Cinematica. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to click subscribe in iTunes or your own favourite podcasting software. I'm not sure that there is any other, actually, that anybody really uses these days.
You can get ones for your smartphones.
And for your droid.
Yes.
Okay, so yes, you can find us...
whichever one you want.
Way. Yeah.
We don't discriminate.
Remember to leave us feedback and give us feedback via social media. We love talking to you.
Yes, you can find us on Twitter, if you haven't already, with our Twitter handle at CinematicaCast, or by looking up Cinematica Podcast. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/cinematicapodcast, and on our website at cinematica.co.nz.
The show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music was 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke. You can buy that at the iTunes store. And we're going to leave you with some more music. We couldn't pass Mount Zion by without playing something from the soundtrack. This is Stan Walker's single called Take It Easy. I'm sure it's all over the radio at the moment, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't be playing it here and featuring it. Until next week, that's all from me.
And all from me. And Stan Walker, if you want to come on the show anytime, stop by.
You gotta take it easy, easy. Take your time. Just you and me together. Any kind of weather, we'll be fine. Ooh. Little by little, someone blows a whistle. It don't matter in the end. So just slow it all down. Slow it all down. Little by little, someone blows a whistle. It don't matter in the end. So just slow it all down. Slow it all down.